We're visiting with Secretary Ryan Walters. He's running for state superintendent today, and we have some very candid questions from some of our listeners, so we're just going to dive right in. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Let's go. Thanks for having me.
When he talks about phasing out federal funding, what is his plan of action to replace those federal funds? Federal funds pay for many crucial programs in our public schools, and they will not survive without them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've talked about this for over a year, and I know that, you know, my opponent has lied all over the state of Oklahoma. You know, the teachers union continues to lie all over the state of Oklahoma. I'm not surprised by that. But what I've said from day one is I'm going to audit every single dollar in education. Every single dollar that we spend, I'm going to audit. Every single program that's been going on at that department, I'm going to audit, because Oklahomans deserve better than being 49th in education. We have invested more in education right now than we ever have as a state. We have invested in the last 4 years over $1 billion in reoccurring revenue to education, and ask teachers if they feel that investment. Most of them will tell you they don't. They have not seen that. It's not making its way to the classroom. We've seen different examples of federal funding that has had strings attached to it that don't align with Oklahoma values. We're not going to have boys going in the girls' bathrooms in the state of Oklahoma. We're not going to allow it. Joe Biden wants that to happen here. Joe Biden wants us to teach critical race theory. Joe Biden wants us to have pornography in the classrooms. These books that they are pushing with these different programs, they're pornography, and they are pushing them to early grade school kids. I've been really clear on this. It's not going to happen here. I'm going to fight the Biden administration to reject any type of strings like that. But what I've said from day one is if we're taking grants or we have money that says, hey, you got to do this and it doesn't align with our values, I want to work with administrators, teachers, and parents across the state to say, number one, does this help kids? Number two, does it have strings attached that go against our values? Number three, is there an accountability process in place? And if the answer to those questions is no, then we need to be phasing those dollars out. That doesn't mean every dollar. That doesn't mean a blanket statement. That means a digging in to ensure that money is going to the best use of for our teachers and for our kids. And so I'm absolutely going to look at every single dollar, and I'm going to make sure that we don't have curriculum and programs that go against our values. So that's, you know, I'm going to continue to do that because I think it's key to ensure that every dollar is being spent in the best way for our kids.
But to be clear, you're not saying we should phase out federal funding.
No, it was a very specific, you know, they decided to cut up a clip of me talking about a specific program. I mean, again, I think if the program doesn't meet the criteria I just said, we need to start having the conversation about, okay, well, what do we do? We need to move away from this money. We need to figure out kind of what we can do instead. But the reality is that's a conversation I want to have with superintendent. And again, I've started these calls with superintendents and teachers from around the state of, hey, talk to me. What programs are beneficial? Which ones aren't? This is the deep dive that's needed. We for years now have had a superintendent that's just grown bureaucracy over there. She's worked with the Biden administration to bring in all this, the strings into the state of Oklahoma. Joe Biden didn't have a clue about how to educate a kid in Oklahoma. I mean, Joe Biden doesn't have a clue about a lot of things, but he definitely doesn't have a clue about Oklahoma education. So this is the conversation I want to have. I want to work with teachers, parents, school leaders, community leaders across the state and say, how do we get to be a leader in education? And if what's holding us back is, hey, well, there's this one federal program here. I'm going to give you an example. We have some federal programs where they give us $1 million, but they require the state to match it with $3 million. And if you come and tell me, well, that program there really doesn't help, I'll say, well, then we could use the $3 million for something that does help.
Sure.
I mean, so those are the conversations that we need to have. And it's not, you know, I've never said I'm going to come in here and do, you know, A, B, and C without talking to anyone. I'm saying the conversation is going to happen. I'm going to hold folks accountable, and I'm going to make sure that what we're doing is what's best for kids.
But what I'm hearing you say is I'm not planning on phasing out FFA. I'm scared for our 4-H program. I'm scared of, you know, X amount of program,
right?
Career tech, all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to find a bigger supporter of FFA, FHA, and ag than me. I mean, you know, part of what I talk a lot about parental empowerment. You know, I talk a lot about getting parents more involved. And what I hear across the state is, you know, I worked with the speaker a couple sessions ago about just how to allow kids to transfer into schools that have a great – and the example he gave was ag programs, because mm-hmm. that's what he heard a lot. And we come from the same neck of the woods down in southeast Oklahoma, and we heard that a lot is, you know, we want access to an ag program. We want access to a career tech. No, these are fantastic programs. As a matter of fact, we've got one of the highest performing career techs in the country. because of their alignment to workforce. They embed themselves in local communities. They really ensure that students are equipped in order to get into local jobs. I think that mission is one of the most vital to the state of Oklahoma, ensuring our young people are connected with their local community. And I think FFA, FHA, and Career Tech are absolutely some of the most vital. I will be a champion for those programs and will always fight for kids to have access to them.
Well, let's break down the voucher system. Lots of people have said this is going to damage rural communities and school. But first off, let's be clear, whether anyone supports it, whether you do or you get elected or you don't, the state superintendent can only make recommendations. It's got to pass through the legislature anyway, correct?
Correct. You know, I mean, and this is part of the conversation. I think parental empowerment is key to education. I think nobody knows best for their kids and their mom and their dad. And so what I want to do is continue to empower parents. Now, you know, that can look different in different areas. You know, allowing parents to choose the school of their choice, I believe, is very important. I believe in Tulsa and Oklahoma City, you're going to see a lot of that. I think in rural Oklahoma, it's more of the conversation we just had about access. It's about, can a kid get, you know, do they have access to a career tech? Do they have access to an FHA program, to an FFA program? Do they have the ability to be in a work internship or externship? This is really, when you're talking about parental involvement, do they have access to different programs that meet the needs of the child? Do they have the ability to see what's going on in the schools? I have this from parents all the time. You know, I want to see the curriculum. I want to know what my kids are being taught, and I want to be able to have say into what's going on in my local school. That's what I see as key here, is parental empowerment. You're hearing, you know, my opponent and the teachers union lie about what this will do here and there, and the reality is, you know, everything that we've talked about parental empowerment and, you know, school choice programs, Arizona has had these programs in place for 30 years, and there hasn't been a single public school close in the entire state in 30 years. So these are fear tactics that they use, but, you know, I think Oklahomans see through this. I believe in parents. I believe in our rural communities and our rural schools. I believe they are the backbone to the education system in the state of Oklahoma. I'm going to do all that I can to continue to empower them and to make sure that they're strong. The governor and I pushed and passed the Red Bud Act, which put over $38 million into stabilizing our most rural schools. That was something we thought was very important. We hear from rural communities about how important their local school is, and I'm going to continue to fight for them and make sure that they have the resources needed to be successful.
So to be clear, the voucher system is not going to hinder rural schools, in your opinion?
Absolutely not. Okay. I mean, the reality is, what I hear more often than not is people who want the experience that comes in our rural schools. Up here in, you know, Oklahoma City and Tulsa, you know, a lot of things we hear about is the bloat, the size of the schools. In a lot of places in rural Oklahoma, hey, your superintendent's wearing three or four hats. They're very involved. They're very embedded in the community. The administrators, the teachers are very embedded in the community. This is really how you get education back on track, is getting that community involvement, and we see that in rural schools. So anything that we do related to parental empowerment is absolutely not going to damage rural schools. I believe it's the backbone of our education system, so I would never do anything to hurt rural schools.
Would you support a pay raise for special education paraprofessionals who only make $12 an hour? How does the plan for teachers to make six figures work? I've heard you and the governor both talk about it, but did not know how it is determined.
Great question. I think that our paraprofessionals are key to solving the teacher shortage, to giving stability to schools during this time, on making sure that students have the support that they need inside their schools. It is key that, number one, we continue to push money from administrative staff into paraprofessional pay. And number two, I think it's key that if paraprofessionals want to become teachers or want to certify in different areas, that we get them a fast track to do that. When I go around to schools all over the state, I hear, you've got to meet some of these paraprofessionals we have here. They are really incredibly beneficial to what we do here. And I meet some fantastic folks that, again, I've got teachers and administrators telling me, hey, if it wasn't for these folks right here, I'm telling you, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And so we've got to support them. And that, like I said, that is getting more of the pay from administrative costs into their pockets, number one. Number two, it's giving them those pathways. Then you asked a question about specifics on the six-figure salary. What that is, again, you know, you can be Joy Hoffmeister and just throw numbers out there and pull them out of the thin air and have a Joe Biden type plan where you just say things and you have no idea on how to pay for them. Or you can work hard with the legislature and find a pathway to do this with existing funds. The reality is, We pay a lot of money in taxes here in the state of Oklahoma. I know a lot of folks all over the state that are working their tails off that are then sending all these tax dollars to the state. We've got money. It's a matter of how we spend the money. So we looked at the lottery fund, and we see that some of that money has not been being allocated to schools yet. And what we said is we want to incentivize every school in the state that if they're going to spend more money on their teachers, we will incentivize it by using lottery funds to match those funds. So when you have a great teacher and you want to keep that great teacher and you want to pay them $15,000 above their base pay, the state will come in with those lottery funds and match them another $15,000. So that can happen up to $50,000. So the match will match up to $50,000. So teachers can make well over $100,000. I met multiple superintendents while we were working on this bill who said, y'all pass that, within a year, I will have some of my staff that can hit six figures. And again, this is what we've been missing in education, is the ability when you have a rock star teacher and you have a teacher that can do other things. They could go enter in the private sector and do something else. They could really help the younger staff and really teach them and train them. But, you know, we haven't given them the ability to, one, stay in the classroom and do those other things. Hey, maybe you teach for half the day and then you mentor these other teachers. Maybe you mentor other teachers on Fridays. You know, however you set that up, we gave a lot of flexibility because we worked with administrators across the state on how can we make this law work in a way that gives you the ability to be successful. And again, we gave six ways for teachers to meet the criteria of getting the pay raise. Because again, we didn't want it to be onerous. We didn't want it to just be teacher evaluation. We wanted them to be able to develop their portfolios. We wanted them to be able to show signs of success. Because the reality is, an art teacher, a rock star art teacher, might look different than a rock star physics teacher or a first grade math teacher. And so we gave broad discretion there with that. We looked at Iowa, Tennessee, and Texas. And we took everything that they did and added that in here. And we took local advice there on making that very broad. Again, where administrators, hey, if you're a great teacher, we want you to be able to show you're a great teacher, and we want to be able to reward you. And we're going to be one of three states in the country that have given teachers a pathway to make this kind of money. I'm very excited about it. I think it gives us a tool to recruit and keep some of the best teachers, and so I think it's key.
So how does it work? Does the school decide, like, who they nominate as the best teacher? So the school decides?
The school decides. The school works with the teacher. They develop, and again, they have these six different areas in which they can do it. They then send it over to the State Board of Education. The State Board of Education certifies it, and boom, the lottery funds come in to match it. So that school district, and the school district does show how, you know, we're going to pay them, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, and then the lottery matches that. And again, look, and I love it because it's both sides. Here's the money. Here's where it comes from. But also, we're incentivizing schools to say, listen, instead of hiring another administrator, instead of hiring more bureaucracy, reward that teacher and let that teacher do some of these things that you need. We need help onboarding new teachers. We need help mentoring and co-teaching with new teachers. Okay, let's use our best teachers to do that. Let's not use a program. Let's not pay out-of-state vendors. That, you know, we're not going to pay somebody to come into the state and come talk to our teachers one day and leave. Well, let's pay a teacher who lives there locally in the school district. Let's let them do some of those trainings. And I think that, again, as a teacher, the best trainings I ever received, the best help I ever received were from other teachers. I mean, I won't give the full long story, but I mean, I a few months in, I really struggled as a teacher. I wasn't doing as well as I wanted to. And luckily, I had a veteran teacher down the hallway that started walking down to my room every day, started talking to me about how we can structure my class to get more kids involved. And then by the end of the semester, it was much better. But again, we need to have an intentionality about that so that every new teacher knows I'm going to be partnered with a mentor teacher, with a teacher who knows what they're doing, who can really help me daily. Because being a great teacher is incredibly difficult. I mean, it is an incredibly difficult job to have, you know, a classroom of 20 kids and get the most out of all those kids. And we've got to do what we can to make sure that we're putting our teachers in a position to be successful.
I think we all learned that when I had to homeschool my kids for like... I learned very quickly how important our teachers were. But I know we've covered this a little bit, but kind of just give us your summary plan for teacher retention here in the state.
Yeah. You know, we get indoctrination out of our schools. We continue to use accountability and transparency measures to, first of all, allow people to see where money's being spent, but then push it down to the classroom. We cannot continue growing bureaucracy. And I can tell you that in working, you know, with state government is, my goodness, bureaucracy wants to grow itself. You know, that is what bureaucracy does. It's what's happened at the State Department of Education, and it's what's happened in districts all over the state, is we've got to continue to say, and again, we go back to the funding issue. some of these grants we've taken have said, well, you've got to hire these administrators to do this paperwork. Again, is that a good use of dollars, or should those dollars be spent in the classroom, giving teachers what they need to be successful? And so that's one of the things we have to do. We've got to continue to make sure that that money is getting to the classroom. We've got to make sure discipline is there in our schools. I mean, again, you know, I hear these heartbreaking stories from teachers about, I'm going to quit. I'm not getting any support. Administrators have to support their teachers. It is the teachers' classrooms where magic happens. That's where learning happens. It is inside the classroom. Administrators have to have a culture of a school that allows teachers to be successful. That's discipline. That's a culture of high expectations. You know, I talk about this a lot. You know, my background is a basketball coach too. So, you know, I have done that for – I was a basketball coach for 8 years. And, coaches do this. You hold kids to high expectations. Sure. You don't come in and say, hey, you know, we're playing a tough team tomorrow, so we're probably going to get whooped. You know, you say, hey, we're playing a tough team tomorrow, so we got to practice hard. We got to stay extra long after practice. Hey, if I got a player that's struggling with free throws, guess what? We're going to stay after practice and work on your free throws. I'm going to individualize what I'm doing to make sure I'm getting the most out of every kid. Same lessons apply to education. But for so long, we've had low expectations. And if you have low expectations on student behavior inside of school, you're setting your teachers up to not be successful, and you're setting your students up for failure. Because we know, as parents, grandparents, kids will rise to the level of expectations you put on them. That those level of expectations should start at the State Department, and they should also be in every school with the administrator setting that culture for their teachers.
Final question. Is money from medical marijuana and the lottery actually going to the schools as promised? And if so, why are so many schools still underfunded throughout the state?
Great question. And this is why, you know, I'm gonna draw another distinction here. You know, the governor and I called for an audit of the State Department of Education. And in that audit, we said we wanted every dollar audited. We mean federal dollars, state dollars, local dollars, lottery dollars, everything. And we want it laid out for everyone to see. And so that's something the auditor is working on. I'm also telling you, when I come in office as state superintendent, I'm going to do my own internal audit of everything going on there, because taxpayers need to see where their money is going, and we need to make sure it's being utilized. But this is the question that folks have all over the state. Is this money getting where it needs to go? We have got to continue. And by the way, when the governor and I announced that, Joy Hoffmeister said that it was an attack on public education. What don't you think about that for a second? That we want to audit, make sure money is getting where it needs to go. And Joy's reaction is, this is an attack. It's not an attack. It's ensuring that taxpayer dollars are being spent appropriately. So when you have left-wing Democrats in these offices, they don't hold people accountable. They don't hold taxpayer dollars accountable. This is where we have to have someone in this office who's willing to say, I need to see where this money is being spent. I need to see the receipts. I need to make sure that what we're doing is beneficial. And I'm a believer in an open door. Hey, I'm very direct. I'm always going to tell people where I stand. I always have an open door that I'm going to, hey, I'm willing to talk to anybody and everybody. Let's figure out what the problems are and let's fix them. So I want to work with administrators, teachers, parents, community leaders across the state and say, hey, are you getting the money you're supposed to be getting? Are your strings attached to it that's inappropriate? Are you getting it in a reasonable fashion? I'm going to tell you, you can ask administrators about this as well. They're not getting the answers from the State Department in a reasonable manner. They're not getting help and the clarity they need on when they're supposed to be getting their allocations. These are things that are being done because there's a dysfunctional leadership at the State Department. And what I intend to do is to bring transparency like we've never seen before there, where anybody can see it. I don't just mean school leaders. I mean everybody in the community. If you want to see where money's going, here it is. You can see every dollar. If you want to see what programs are going on here and what curriculum's being pushed here or what professional development, here it is. Complete open book, completely transparent, because that's how you ensure the best use of taxpayer dollars. And that's what we've got to continue to do with all of these funds.
I'm going to let you close with just teacher to teacher, kind of give them a feel of what you want them to know, because I feel like there's been a lot of things that have gone around. We've all heard different things from both sides. So kind of just speak right now to teachers.
Yeah, you know, I am a teacher. My mother was a teacher. I decided I want to be a teacher when I was 14 years old, and I was sitting in a U.S. history class, and I had this incredible teacher. He's since passed, but his name was Mr. Horn there at McAllister High School, and I had a great teacher that made history come alive and made me see that through critical thinking and through investigations in history and the understanding of history, the knowledge that comes from that actually empowers me as an individual. And I'm a huge believer that America is the greatest country in the history of the world, that our history is something for us to be proud of. Our history is something that we want to pass on to future generations to be inspired by. And I had a teacher that taught me that. And outside of my family, there's been no one who's impacted my life more than my teachers. That's why I got into teaching. That's why I'm sitting here having this conversation today. It's what drew me into education, is the power of a teacher. I want us to have the best teachers in the country. I want our best teachers to be supported. I want the best for our kids. I want every kid to get the best education possible. And I know that means, number one, parental involvement, parents engaged, parents having say in their child's education. And I want that broken down by, hey, not every kid needs to go to college. You know, I think that's one of the things we've gotten very wrong in education. We've tried to push kids and tell every kid they need to go to get a four-year degree. No, they don't. Some of my most successful students did not go to college. I got a kid that I just saw last week. Had been a couple years, a fine young man. He owns three small businesses now. Never spent a minute in college. Hard worker, knew what he wanted to do, went and worked for some folks, learned on the job. He's got three small businesses. It's fantastic. I mean, just a few years. I've got another young man that was a former student of mine that is now an underwater welder for an oil company. He began working his way up. And he even told me the story about, he apologized to me that he wasn't going to college because he felt that there were some teachers in our school that made him feel that he was a failure for not going to college. He's one of my most successful former students. We've got to get out of that belief that the one-size-fits-all model approach works for all kids. You know, every kid's different. Every kid's unique. Teachers get that. Teachers want to be part of those conversations. And so what we've got to do is we've got to make sure that parents are involved. We've got to make sure that parents are empowered. And we've got to make sure that we're doing what we can to support our good teachers. That means keeping them, number one. That means recruiting them. And then it means giving them the tools to be successful. Because, again, I just don't know people. I don't know the teachers that get into the profession to say, I don't want to do a good job, or I don't want to get better. What I hear from teachers all the time is, I want to do better. Hey, I want to be more successful. I want to learn. I mean, teachers are lifelong learners. And so what we've got to do is continue to get them the resources to be successful. Continue to make sure that money's not going to bloat and money is getting actually to them. And if we do this, and I've been to all 77 counties, done, you know, I think we did 300 events is what we were looking at here in the last few months, and talked to tens of thousands of voters. We're the best state in the country. I mean, we have these tight-knit communities that tell me, hey, I want better for my kids. You know, that's what I want. I want to know that our school and their education is better than what I got. That's what we want to pass on to the next generation. And we've got a lot of Oklahomans concerned that that's not the case. What I want to do is I want to help us get there. I want us to help get there where parents know my kid's getting a good education. My kid's going to be even more equipped to lead a successful life than I am. My kid is going to be someone that values American history and understands what's made us great as a country, but also the individuals in history. And that they're equipped with a skill set that translate into workforce. And so that's why I'm running for this office. I'm a true believer in Oklahoma. I'm a true believer in our communities. I think we can absolutely be a leader in education. I don't mean that for bragging rights on a ranking. I mean that because if we're a leader in education, that means our kids have a better shot at a good education than any other kid in the country, and our kids deserve that. So that's what I'm going to continue to fight for.
Well, thanks for sitting in the hot seat. This has been a lot of them today, so we appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate your time.